Welcome to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have comedian, podcaster, and filmmaker Kyle Clark. Many of you probably know Kyle from his work on the Nerdist podcast, as well as the podcast that he hosts, This Is Rad. Kyle's also worked on the Nerd Turns that was on Nerdist.com, as well as, you know, a variety of other things that you've all seen him in. He did have a stand-up special that came out a couple years back. That was absolutely hilarious. If you guys have not had a chance to check that out, make sure you do. But yeah, while we were out in LA this last week, I wanted to make sure that I had a chance to sit down with Kyle. We initially tried to get him on the podcast during our San Diego Comic-Con episode, but Kyle actually wasn't down in San Diego this year with everybody from Nerdist. So we knew as we were coming back out to LA that we had to be able to sit down with Kyle and learn more about him. We usually just get the little quips at the beginning of Nerdist when, you know, he's doing the community corkboard, and he's there, you know, here and there on some of the episodes of the podcast, and we kind of talk about that. But it's always intrigued me to kind of, you know more about kind of the behind the scenes of what Kyle does. I think he's a fantastic comic. If you haven't listened to Nerdist episode of the stand-up cluster, you'll hear him on there as well as a bunch of other great comics. But yeah, Kyle is just a fantastic comedian and, you know, has been a big part, I feel, of the Nerdist podcast. And so, yeah, we wanted to find out a little bit more about Kyle. We had the, you know, awesome opportunity to be able to record at the Nerd Melt showroom out in Los Angeles, in the tech room, you know, where they do the Meltdown show, and that was kind of just a lot of fun to be there. You know, Meltdown's always a place that I make a priority to go every time we're in Los Angeles, and it was great to be able to be there and record a podcast while we were there. Many of you guys have heard me kind of reference Jesse from time to time. Austin and I brought our friend Jesse Knight out with us to Los Angeles. You know, give him his first experience. He'd never been out to LA before. And Jesse sat in with me on the few episodes that we recorded out there. And it was kind of great to have him chime in. And he asked a lot of great questions throughout both the podcasts that we recorded out there. So when you hear a new voice on the show this week, it's Jesse Knight. And hopefully Jesse's going to be joining me on some other episodes, kind of, you know, even here in Salt Lake, when we're back out on the road recording some shows. It was great to have Jesse on board, and we had a lot of fun with him out there. It was just an overall great time. But yeah, it was a lot of fun talking with Kyle, kind of learning about, you know, what has inspired him to become a filmmaker. We talked about some of the films that he's made, some of his comedy, and how, you know, that's all come about, and really how his career with Nerdist has built. Even into him working as a PA on The Talking Dead. So it's a lot of cool stuff. Kyle's just got an awesome, you know, really still fairly young career that's just, you know, a lot of great work already going on with that. And I'm very excited to see, you know, what's next for Kyle. Any of you that are out in Los Angeles on December 4th at Meltdown, Kyle will be taping his new special. Ticket information's not up on NerdMelt LA yet. But make sure you stay tuned to that. You can go to Meltdown Comics, and they also have the link there for NerdMeltLA.com. And yeah, you'll be able to see all the information there. Any shows that are at Meltdown Comics and they're at the Nerd Melt showroom, you can find tickets and info on that website there. But yeah, Kyle's going to be taping his special there on December 4th, so you're not going to want to miss that. I'm kind of hoping I can even make it back out for that. Like I said, I love being out there, and yeah, it would be great to see Kyle tape this special. Again, we had such a fantastic time while we were in Los Angeles. Recorded, you know, the podcast here with Kyle that you're about to hear. Also sat down with Barbara Gray. Great time over at UCB there on Sunset. And yeah, had a great conversation with her. That episode will go up next week. And then we were also over at Emily Gordon's book event for the release of Super You. That was just, it's an absolutely amazing book. I highly encourage everybody to get out and get that. The book event, of course, featured readings from Emily, from little sections of the book, as well as stand-up throughout the night. Kate Berlant opened up the show. She was absolutely fantastic. Sarah Silverman was kind of the middle act there. Sarah's bits were amazing. It was such a funny show. I absolutely loved it. And then topping off the show was Kurt Brownoler, who, of course, has been a previous guest on the podcast. And it was kind of fun to be able to meet Kurt in person for once. You know, we had him on the podcast, but it was a phone interview. And unfortunately, we'd never met in person until just this last week after Emily's book event. Of course, Emily's absolutely hilarious husband, Kamel Nanjiani, was there as well. It was great to kind of talk to Kamel for a little bit after the show. And yeah, it was just an amazing, amazing event. I'm very excited for Emily and Kamel, you know, with everything that they have going. They're so much fun to watch on stage as they brought everybody up afterwards to kind of have a little bit of a panel discussion there. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. So yeah, get out and buy Super You. If you know, bookstores are starting to become few and far between. So if you can't find a bookstore, that's what Amazon's for. Get on there, order Super You by Emily Gordon, and yeah, you won't be disappointed at all. So this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Club 50 West. Club 50 West here in downtown Salt Lake. A lot of great stand-up shows, live recordings of the podcast this Friday at Club 50 West. I am Salt Lake's recording a live show there. Get out there, support Chris Holifield. His show is absolutely fantastic. He has special guests Levi Rounds, Kerry Jackson, and Paul Dwayne on the show. I believe the show starts at 7:30. I am Salt Lake live. Club 50 West. Make sure you get out to that. Also coming up the first part of November, Dave Koechner. You've seen Dave Koechner, of course, on The Office, Anchorman. Basically everything. I feel like Koechner is everywhere, and he's just a phenomenal comedian. So get out and see those. He's here, I believe it's November 4th, 5th, and 6th. Yeah, you're not going to want to miss those events. And then also, one extra show to kind of plug, not a Club 50 West show, but still, get out and support our sponsor, Club 50 West, on this. Also, Chris Hardwick brings the Fun Comfortable Tour to Kingsbury Hall on November 6th with another one of our previous guests. April Richardson is on that show. So make sure you get out. There are still tickets available for that, I believe, at kingtix.com. So make sure that you get on there. Check that out. If you've never seen Chris Hardwick live, you see him every week on The Talking Dead on At Midnight. But, hey, you're still not seeing all of his stand-up. So get out and see the Fun Comfortable Tour as that comes to Salt Lake City as well. Again, thank you, Kyle Clark, for taking the time out of your day. Kyle's a busy, busy guy. He has so much going on. And, we are thrilled to be able to sit down and talk with him over at Meltdown. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Make sure you follow Kyle Clark on all of his social media links. All of those will be available on the website, onthemicpodcast.com. You can check out his podcast, This Is Rad. And yeah, all the links, like I said, are going to be available for those on the website. And yeah, check those out. Enjoy this episode with Kyle Clark. This is like the first run of everything you already have.
Today I've got this, and then we've got the open mic, and then we're actually, because we just launched a YouTube channel for This Is Rad.
Oh, nice.
And we're having a guy film a behind the rad thing where it's showing sort of how we put it together from like the mic and then getting everybody showing up and then doing the record and all that, and sort of just showing a little behind the scenes kind of open source thing.
Oh, cool.
So it's it's a fun little experiment of just trying to put shit on the channel.
So how long have you been doing the open mic now? Because I know it was initially Matt's
open mic. Yeah, it was Matt Myers' day off, and it was co-hosted by Paul Sebas. And I came in, I showed up for the first time to the third Matt Myers' day off, because I'd been doing comedy for about 3 years and then really hardcore for about a year and a half. And then had heard about that because I was another guy listening to the podcast. And then showed up, and actually that first night was before they sort of had the format we have now. And it ran long, but then a bunch of people left, so me and a couple other people still got to go up. And then I had met sort of people who just started, because the theater had just opened, and I was one of the last hires, the original run of interns. And I had done music for like 10 years before I got into comedy, and so I knew how to like run a PA and stuff like that. And they're like, we need a tech for the open mic. Do you want to like tech the open mic? And so I worked as the tech, and then for a while, like Matt was doing it, but he was getting busier and busier, so he was showing up less and less. So I sort of just started co-hosting, and then at a certain point he was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I took over co-hosting at that point. We changed it from Matt Myers' day off to the Nerd Melt mic about a year in. And then at that point, me and Paul Sebas ran it for another year and a half after that. And then John Ngaro, who is a buddy of mine who was also an intern and worked on a ton of stuff for the theater, came in as the filler when I or Paul was out of town. And then from there, Paul finally got super busy, and so John took over. And then John and I ran it for probably 2 years. I think I've been running it for about 5 years now.
Oh, since wow.
2011.
I'd realize it had been that long. The first time I think I came to one of the Nerd Melt open mics maybe a year and a half ago.
Okay.
So, and I got here too late to even try and sign up for anything. Mm-hmm. So I hopped into the back of the room, and it was just like, well, it's finally at Nerd Melt.
Yeah. It's my second home. It's been a real gift to be a part of this world. So it's been really cool. And so from there I worked as an intern, and then I worked as tech staff for a while after I stopped interning, and then I did a show for the Nerdist YouTube channel when that launched that I did two seasons of that I wrote and I directed on the first season, and then I
and that was the
acted,
Nerd Turns,
yeah,
right?
Acted and produced and wrote on the second season, and then and then post all that stuff, I quit a job to go do stand-up in New York as part of this long story, and then was just broke. And then sort of out of the blue got a message from Chris, and, then it ended up being the job offer for working on the podcast and working on Talking Dead, and I've been doing that for 3 years now. So it's just been this sort of like surreal, just a stumbling upwards game.
Yeah, well, it's like more and more and more I hear your name on things, and that's where I was just like, I've got to talk to Kyle, like, we're coming back to LA. I've got to make that happen. And I know we tried to get you even down in San Diego. And
yeah, and then it was the first year and a couple years that I hadn't been in San Diego, just because I actually had like an open weekend where I'm like, oh, my whole job is going to San Diego. If I stay here, I can go to a movie and sleep in.
I think everybody's schedule though going into that, because April Richardson, April and I were trying to coordinate something, because she was actually coming to Salt Lake the following week.
Ah.
And between my schedule at Comic-Con and her, like, 12 hours she was there, I was that's just not going to going to happen.
Comic-Con's such a crazy clusterfuck. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's madness.
This was my first year doing San Diego, and, yeah, I think clusterfuck's almost an underestimated word.
It's insane.
So, I mean, Salt Lake Comic-Con is finally, I mean, it's still the third largest.
Oh, right on.
And it's exploded insanely fast.
The whole convention world seems like it's just lit on fire these days. It's interesting because I for as much nerd stuff as I'm around, I don't do a lot of the convention circuit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting just in the last couple of years watching things just sort of explode and become bigger and bigger. It's been really interesting. I have a couple of friends who are really heavy on like the convention circuit world. And it's been really neat to just watch that be like a viable channel for some people to do stuff through.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, that's where all of a sudden people started really paying attention, is the more and more panels I was a part of at Salt Lake. It was like, oh, this is opening more and more doors, and then...
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden as it got over to San Diego, where they're like, yeah, you know, we'll put you in as part of the program, and it was like, oh, shit.
Oh, cool.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, the convention side of things, I never in a million years would have thought that would have been something I would have even been able to do. And
were you a big convention goer before all that stuff?
No. Like, Salt Lake Comic Con was the first one I had gone to. I was actually living in Burbank when they had launched the first one.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'd moved back from Burbank the very last day, so I didn't even get to see the first one. And then, I don't know if you've heard the Geek Show podcast at all.
I know the name.
So they're actually based in Salt Lake.
Oh, okay.
And they asked me to moderate their panel at FanX, which is kind of Salt Lake Comic Con's WonderCon.
Okay.
And that it kind of just
very
popped
cool.
It from there. But yeah, those were the very first cons I had ever gone to. I didn't know what to expect. I was also working local radio at the time. And
cool.
Walked in at like 5 in the morning and Chewbacca comes walking past. And I was like, where the fuck is there a Chewbacca at 5 in the morning? Like, I don't know if I drank too much last night or what, but that was Chewbacca.
That's awesome.
So now, I mean, you mentioned, you know, after all the Nerdist stuff, as you kind of were doing things here, then you took that long trip. What was the whole thing with New York?
Oh, no, that was just, I was going to Washington, D.C. for a wedding, and then realized that a bus ticket to New York from D.C. was like $40.
Oh.
And had talked to a couple people at like the, or somebody ran a show at the Creek in the Cave, so I had one book thing, and then just hit a bunch of mics. So it wasn't even anything like big, but it was just like, the first time I was like, all right, I gotta, it was more of a personal thing. It was like, I just have to do this for myself and go and do it. Like, and so, because at this point, basically, anytime I travel for like family or for anything, I try to just like work a couple of gigs in to sort of help justify traveling places. So, and it's been kind of fun. Like, I have a friend who travels a lot, so I've tagged along with him a few times. So I've done like shows in Portland, and then like I did a show in Oakland when I was on a trip with a girlfriend at the time, and then like I had a family trip where we were going and spreading my grandparents' ashes in Hawaii, but found a way to book stand-up during the trip, and it was a really cool experience.
I've started to even see that with, I mean, even as we came down here, like, this is Jesse's actually first time ever in Los Angeles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, why don't you just tag along with us? Come on down. So my producing partner,
so he's usually... Do you stand up?
He never has. So my producing partner doesn't either. I'm kind of the odd man out with any of that.
Okay, cool.
But as we were coming down, like, he's out with some girl right now.
All
right. Doing who knows what at this point. So see, he came in to actually grab our hotel key.
Oh.
I was just like, I'm really tired.
I was just like, oh, I bet you are. He's just like, yeah, I didn't sleep at all last night. I love the, like, everybody, like, who's fun?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it was for once, I had to justify it of, okay, well, I've got to make sure I get a bunch of podcasts recorded. I've got to get some work done while I'm down there.
Nice.
I can't not be working. So it's become a disease, but it's a great disease to
most
have.
Definitely.
So now, with where everything's at now, I mean, is the official title you have with Nerdist now the production assistant, or since grown?
I mean, technically, that's probably the title at this point. My sort of title is just Kyle. Like, I'm just sort of like around. I do the cork board. You know, I will occasionally fill in, sitting on for co-hosty stuff.
Yeah.
And then I transcribe stuff Chris says and then sort of put it in a running document for him for show notes. And then I help with, like, keyword stuff for, like, the search optimization and all that kind of stuff for the website, which basically just means I do a little, like, write-up of whatever the episode is and then send that out to, like, 1,000 mysterious forces on the internet. So it's just sort of a random hodgepodge quilt of stuff.
That's, I mean, it's got to be a cool job, though. I mean, especially with so many of the episodes that, I mean, Nerdist has done at this point. I mean, it's what, like almost 700 now?
It's past 700. It's almost 750, I think, if not more. Like,
I would say I can't believe I'm that far behind, because I don't feel like I'm that far behind, but with 3 a week, yeah, it's easy to get that.
It's pretty crazy.
That far behind fast. But yeah, I think the last one I listened to was... might have actually been one of the last Hostfuls, because then I went back to some of the old ones, because I know we had Joel Hodgson coming.
Oh, right on.
To Salt Lake Comic Con, and I was like, so I don't stutter over myself seeing Joel Hodgson, I better listen to the old Nerdist episode so I have something to say to him.
Nice.
Other than just, you're Joel Hodgson.
Nice.
But out of all of those, I mean, who's been the one that kind of shocked you the most in being able to sit in on that interview?
Well, I mean, probably the biggest, craziest one was really early on, maybe within the first month I was working there. We had Henry Rollins on, and he is probably my hero among heroes.
Yeah.
like a hardcore punk rocker from the first time I realized that I could be fat and awkward and be punk rock instead of dork, and just never look back. And just his work ethic and that whole DIY thing sort of built around, like, Black Flag on the West Coast and sort of Discord Records on the East Coast has been a huge influence on me. So getting to meet him was a pretty surreal thing, and, like, sitting in on that episode and basically just getting to have, like, a conversation with, like, a guy who has had a big influence on me, where it wasn't even, like, me going, like, oh my god, you changed things, but more just, like we talked about Simon Reynolds' book Rip It Up and Start Again about the history of post-punk for, like, 20 minutes, like, even before they turned the microphones on, and he was like, oh, you've got to go find the British imprint version of it, because it's actually even longer, like, and has more stuff, and I'm like, that's insane. And so just getting to talk to him, that was a real crazy, surreal moment for myself, just because that wasn't even, getting on mic was not even a goal.
Yeah.
Well, not a goal, but, like, not a thing I imagined being possible at that point. And so for it to be not only that, but also, like, doing that with someone who is one of your, like, all-time heroes was pretty cool. I'm trying to think other ones that were kind of crazy. I mean, it was neat sitting in with DC Pearson, just because that was a lot of fun, because he's a guy who I admired from Derek Comedy, and we had done a lot of stand-up together, and it was a weird moment where, like, I realized I was saying something about my brother on it, and then DC knows my brother, because my brother's been at stand-up shows I've been at, so they've met. And it's funny, because, like, there was a while where, like, DC and I were on a lot of stuff, and he'd come out and did a show I used to run, and so he'd, like comics have a weird series of run-ins with my dad, because he's just sort of a fun, silly guy, and so, like, it's funny, because, like, I think, like, Kamel and Jonah and DC Pearson, and I think a couple other people have all had just these odd interactions with my dad, so that they're always just like, how's your dad doing? Or, like, you know, my brother looks a lot like DC, because they both just got the long hair Jesus look. So that was a real surreal moment, was just him going, like, oh yeah, I know your brother. I'm like, I'm on Nerdist referencing some bullshit about my brother, and me and DC just knows that because we have, like, a prior relationship. So that was a real strange one. Then there's been, I don't know, like, guests that surprise you, and that's always interesting. Like, there's definitely, to me, it's always interesting, the people who you end up getting along with, or who end up being super cool, are, you know, often people who I'm sort of like really this guy, and then they end up being super like you know. I always think like the best example is I think it was earlier this year or late last year. We had on Corey Taylor from Slipknot.
Yeah.
And I would not call myself like a Slipknot fan. I have probably made fun of Slipknot in the past. And he's maybe one of the nicest people we've ever had on in the history of the podcast.
Oh, wow.
Like, he literally like was on his phone before the thing, checking in because his kid's on a different time zone. His kid was getting out of school. So he was just checking in with his kid to make sure he had homework and was just being a good dad. And then him and this kid are having a conversation about some creepypasta his son read. And it's like, holy shit, you're like a good dad and you're a cool dad. And then he knew a bunch about vintage action figures, which is a jam of mine. So it was just, I'm just like, oh, this guy is fucking rad. I feel terrible that I've been a condescending hipster asshole about stuff. So it's definitely done a great job of like teaching you to like not to put your pre-assumptions. Like, the same thing happened with the dude we had one of the guys from Fun on, who's also in a bunch of other bands like Steel Train, but again,
Jack
Antonoff or whatever.
Yeah.
Who, again, I was sort of like I hate the band Fun with all my being, and I still hate that band. But like, he is again one of the fucking nicest.
Yeah,
because that one was crazy. Because like, again, my brother is in a touring band, and they had just gotten back from tour, and he was like super fascinated hearing me talk about somebody else's like tour stories. So like, I text my brother like, hey, just to ruin your day, like the guy from Fun knows about Tide Mouth. And he's like, that's real weird.
What's funny with Jack is that like, when he was actually still in Steel Train, a show that I had worked on.
And I'd forgotten that he's in Steel Train. And, like, they're a phenomenal band.
I had
it was funny looking back where I was like, I feel bad that I've judged him for this one thing when he's involved in all, like, Bleachers are a fucking great band. Yeah, Steel Train
Bleachers has been amazing. That was one album that when I listened to it, I was like, I expected this to be good, but holy shit, this is a great album. But the last show that Jack actually played with Steel Train was also the last show the format played together.
Interesting.
That was in it was in Lehigh, Utah, at this just random ass festival. That I mean, it went from like I want to say Dashboard Confessionals headlined it, Toad the Wet Sprocket was on it, the Aquabats were on it, and it was just like it was the strangest festival.
Random.
Yeah, and I remember sitting with the Aquabats watching one band open up, and they were just like, "Who the fuck is this band, and why are they on this show?" And it was just like, "Oh, I didn't realize the Aquabats were like that." Okay, I mean, it's Utah. And the biggest thing with the Aquabats when I was a kid was, since it's a very Mormon culture, was supposedly one of the guys in the band is Mormon, and they talk about, oh, there's a CTRing on the cover. I was like, what the fuck are you talking? And I think it's on the cover of whichever one has Captain Hampton and the Midget Pirates, whichever album that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is like flexing like this, and you can see that he's wearing a ring. But they acted like that was like the front of the cover. So like my entire perception of the Aquabats for like the longest time when I was a kid is, yeah, these guys are a Mormon band. It's like, oh no,
that's
not.
I knew them as a like Mormon band and a ska band, and then so I was definitely late to that party, but once I fell in, I fell hard. Actually, the first comedy show I ran myself was actually called Pizza Day, and Pizza Day from the Aquabats was our theme music that we played.
That's awesome.
But yeah,
so now I know you were just recently on the episode with Robert Rodriguez.
I was in the room for it. Yeah, I wasn't on mic for it. But yeah, that was another big deal one where I was freaking out because he's probably also in that like top 10 pantheon of people who've totally influenced my life.
Now did you say, didn't you say a couple things on that episode?
Yeah, I think I chime in a little bit.
Because one thing, correct me if I'm wrong, you'd mentioned you were an aspiring filmmaker as well.
Yes.
I did not know that. What type of stuff have you been doing as film goes?
Right now, before I got into comedy, I had sort of kind of fallen out with music. I had been in a band that sort of burned out, and then I was doing some folk stuff and had done a record, and then was just sort of like, it wasn't fun anymore. And I'd gone to college for creative writing for like prose and fiction stuff, and then ended up minoring in film, and then through that ended up getting to shoot sort of a little project there. And it was the first time I'd really directed something, and I really liked it. So with all of the little bit of graduation money I'd gotten, I'd bought a camera. And I'd bought the nicest camcorder you could buy a month before the DSLR revolution started. But so it was fine, because like, I still have that camera. I still love my little camera, because I'm just like I worked so hard to learn how to do like rack focuses and stuff you shouldn't be able to do with this camera.
With the basic camcorder.
And shot two shorts with that, and one of them was like a 20-minute long thing about a guy who like is sad because of a breakup, and then starts falling backwards through time, Slaughterhouse-Five style, having to relive things and see his, like, how he was at fault in things. And it took, like, 3-4 months to make, and I burned a lot of money making it, and it was a great experience. I'm still really proud of it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely one of those things where, like, oh, filmmaking is real expensive.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started pushing stand-up a little bit more and started going with that, because I'm like, oh, this is, like, the least barrier to entry thing. Maybe I should just do this. Because I'd sort of dabbled in it off and on, and then just sort of doubled down and was like, all right, this is I'm eat, sleep, breathing, like, you know, fucking samurai comedy, you know, doing this for. And then the first season of Nerd Turns came along, and I got I directed the pilot, and I did, I think, 5 episodes maybe. Then I kind of co-directed a couple beyond that and really loved that. And then the second season, I was actually a little bummed because we had a fantastic director, but I definitely missed directing on that. And then finally, a year ago, scraped money together and bought a T3i DSLR.
And that's what I've been shooting.
And so I've been shooting since then, and then did a couple of pieces for a aborted sort of film collective project last year, and then actually just put the 2 completed sketches from that group on as part of the content for the launch channel for This Is Rad. And
awesome.
Then my girlfriend Natalie Hazen, who was a Nerd Turn here, and she was a writer and actress on the second season of Nerd Turns, her and I, she has been writing a bunch of sketches that I've been directing. So it's been sort of now, it kind of got reignited actually from another podcast episode. Was we had Joe Lynch, the director of Knights of Badassdom,
yeah.
And now Everly, which if you haven't seen is fucking phenomenal. You should immediately go see it. But he, by the end of his episode, I was just like, oh, like, not only do I think this guy's cool, but I just want to be this guy's friend.
Yes.
He is literally living my dream. Because, like, I have sort of 3 loves. I love music, and then I love comedy, and then I fucking love horror. And
yeah.
So, like, my long-term goal is sort of to be a sort of, like, working, touring, not even, like, crazy anything, but, like, just being able to be a road comic who can sort of make a living doing that, so that I can periodically just piece together and do super low budget sort of, like, culty horror stuff. Like, I'm a big Troma fan. I love Roger Corman. Like, I love all of that kind of just really visceral. And again, big influence on, you know, Robert Rodriguez, Sam Raimi, you know, all that kind of stuff.
What is it that draws you to the horror genre particularly?
I think it's the same thing that I like about comedy, is that it's just this sort of, like, primal elemental feel to it, is that you're just tapping into sort of the most base elements of human, you know, emotions. You know,
yeah.
They're sort of like,
undeniable.
Want to eat, want to have sex, and then beyond that, your next 2 things are like laughter and fear, because they're kind of the same thing, just
yeah.
The 2 ends of the spectrum. And so, like, I think that I just, since I was, I you know, the first, when I was a kid, the first movie that ever made me want to make movies was Scream. Like, before that,
oh,
I was like,
awesome.
Movies are neat, and I like movies, but, like, the first time I saw it, I was like, fuck, I want to do that, was, like, Scream, and then sort of going through, like,
it's amazing how well, too, Scream still holds
up.
Oh,
yeah, I watched it the day I found out Wes Craven died, and had just a real emotional connection with it, where it's just like, God, this still
yeah.
lights the same fire under me it did when I was, like, in 5th grade. and so, yeah, so it's been those 2 kinds of things. So yeah, so it's been trying to light a fire under my ass to get more stuff shot. It's just like, it just takes so much time and planning
yeah.
and work, and especially like trying to split that between like working and doing stand-up, because stand-up still at this point, like, the main love, because I love directing, it's probably my second favorite thing only to stand-up, but like I'm just such a whore for attention that like and there's no better high than just like getting up and having a really great set doing stand-up. And like, I'm probably best suited for that stuff. I'm not like the best comedian in the world. Like, I'm just a guy who just likes trying to be silly and make people laugh, and I do that in my everyday life anyways because I'm an obnoxious ham. So finding out that that's like a thing you can do, but yeah, but then it's funny because the flip side is like, directing comedy's fun. Like, the first sketch that we've released on the This Is Rad YouTube channel is a piece called Courtroom Hot Tub that Natalie wrote, and I sort of pitched some lines to, and then directed. And I love that. But it's definitely been trying to, the 2 that we that are also on the channel right now are both horror themed comedy sketches, and I definitely like I feel like that's long term. Like I don't know if you guys have seen any of the stuff Bobcat Goldthwait's done.
Oh, I love Bobcat.
He's probably my spirit animal. That I'm like, I could just be him. That's a pretty sweet life. And then I just imagine him and me going, no, it's not. Actually, it was really cool. The first sketch I did, I had like just a religious fervor where I had to get this thing made, and it's the dumbest sketch, but I'm super proud of it. But it's called The Randy Clyde Williams Show, and it's about a John Wayne Gacy style clown serial killer who hosts a talk show in his murder basement and forces his captives to watch it as the studio audience. And we shot it on VHS so that it looks like a snuff film. And a friend of mine lives in a terrible building in MacArthur Park downtown. And we're literally like ankle deep in like human wastewater because like this building is fucking super haunted and terrifying. And like the location we're shooting in, I just kept having to go like, guys, nobody has to be in there, me and maybe the DP to set stuff up, and then the last minute we'll get all of you actors in to shoot this stuff because I am not going to subject everybody just sitting in this awful location. Yeah. It stank. There was like stagnant water, but it was the, like, when you look at it, you cannot build production value that intensely. Like, it's fucking brutal looking, but it's also super fun. Like, I'm also a huge fan of like makeup. Like, two of real good friends of mine both work as makeup guys. We've had them on my podcast a bunch of times. Lawrence Mercado and Chris Korn, who are both two of maybe the most talented artists I've ever met. Like, Lawrence and I literally bonded because like we're both sort of like old punk rock guys who like love horror way too much and can just talk about, you know, makeup effects from, you know, late 80s splatter movies for like
currents.
7 hours long after, like, people will sit and listen, and then it's fun because you'll watch the point where they go, oh, they're not going to stop and I'm going to die someday, so I have to leave now, and we will just be the two old men sitting in front of a closed building until 5 a.m. just going like, yeah man. And it's crazy because like you build the packet up and when, so that when you hit and the impact goes, and I'm just like, oh, this is great. Like, so he did real minimal makeup for that, but just even that was fun to just have somebody who's so good at makeup that you can do the subtlety so that everybody looks filthy and fucked up. And I feel bad because like a couple of people who were in it, I had to cut it down pretty aggressively, and it's funny because like there's so much makeup in that movie that you see in part of a frame of a VHS shot, and it's fun. Like, it's sad because like so much work went into it and you see so little of it, but at the same time, like, it is kind of an unsettling sketch to watch because it just looks real. Like, because it's not, we didn't go in and shoot on the T3i and then in post make it look like VHS. I bought as much vintage VHS C stock that I could find online for a camera that I found in my aunt's garage that had a tape inside that was from a family party from 9/11/1999. So it was just a real just a series of ominous things and having to digitize everything. And I think I had to redigitize all of the footage 5 separate times because because you have a real bad sync problem when you're using really awful out of date technology that's been sitting in a hot garage for several years. So it was a nightmare, but at the same time I'm super proud of what we built in the end because it's
I'll have to look that
real
one
unsettling.
Because that sounds absolutely amazing.
And that's definitely close. Like, that one is probably the closest to my personal enjoyment because, like, on top of it looking real unsettling and being, but also being really silly. Like, we have Dan Telfer, the comedian, brilliant comedian, he works on At Midnight, in a human-sized dog cage. I have a giant dog, so we had to crate her. We had an old one, like an old crate that was like rusty and fucked up from like all this stuff and being exposed outside, and I just made him, this father of two, like covered in blood, get into a human-sized dog cage in a horrifying basement in a bad part of Los Angeles. And to me, like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And so getting like stuff like that, and that's probably close to sort of a sense of aesthetic that's close to my girlfriend. Like, makes fun because like we both write and we both work on stuff, and we've gotten really good at like I half the stuff I do I couldn't do without her. Like, she's an amazing producer and she's a brilliant writer and she's a quality human being. But it's funny, she makes fun of me because like my stand-up's very clean. Like, I and not by any like concentrated plan, it's just sort of like where the character I've sort of built and sort of what I do sort of works is sort of this fun, silly kind of stuff. But then it's funny because in reality, like when we're hanging out doing stuff, like she gets almost mad because my default place to go with jokes is always the darkest, worst, most, like that's, don't say that out loud to people. Like we were playing a game recently, she's going to kill me for this, but like she was like I was driving to a show and she was rolling with me to the show and she just listened to WTF where Nick DiPaolo was talking about him and Louis C.K. used to stay up all night and just go back and forth saying, I shit so big, I blank, you know, like, and just filling in the blanks. And she was like, I think that'd be fun. Like, let's just fucking do a bunch of these because we're both disgusting monsters who love, you know, filth jokes. And my first one was, I shit so big I couldn't hear the hooker breathing afterwards. And she was like, I don't want to play this game anymore. I'm done. You ruined the game. So, you know, so stuff like that.
Even stuff like that, it's funny too, depending on who you're saying it to.
That is my favorite part, was one of the best parts of kind of getting into comedy was finding people that you can just go balls to the wall,
yeah,
joke-wise with, has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Jesse's had to put up with it on the entire drive down here with my producing partner and I, because we will just go nonstop and 20 minutes later.
That sounds like a hellscape, and the fact that you've not taken your own life to get away from these fucking shitbags.
Yeah, we've been waiting for them to jump
the other side. I remember, like, you gotta get with the comedy. I'm always like, no, we're the monster. We're wrong. Like, you're a good person.
Hey, I'm glad that they took the place, because usually when I'm with my friends, I have the most awful jokes. Even with Tim and Austin yesterday, I was just telling Tim actually earlier, it's okay that sometimes it's not funny to anybody else, but inwardly, you'll say a joke and you're like, oh, that failed. Look at the other person, that failed.
Yeah, he looked at us last night after saying something and both of us were just like, nope. I like doing that even though on stage if something just falls flat. I'm just like, yeah, that one didn't go. And what's funny is that usually seems for some reason to bring the laughter because they're just like, ah, you fucked up and that was bad.
I'm just curious because I've never done stand-up. I love comedy. I love horror. Everything that we're talking about, I'm all about. When you started doing stand-up and you kind of started to fill your niche or whatever you want to call it, how really did that happen? Do you feel like it happened naturally?
It's a super organic process. I have gone through so many different, like, phases trying, you know, like you do with stand-up. Is I feel like your first 2 years of stand-up are just you going, I got this figured out.
Yeah.
And then you're 5 years and you're like, oh, that fuckface thought he had it figured out. I knew nothing. And like, I'm 7 years, then I'll be 8 years next year. I'm doing my first proper record in December. I did a 24-minute cassette tape 5 years in. Just because I was like, I need a challenge. I needed a direction to do something. I needed an excuse to try to learn how to do a longer set. Mm-hmm. And now I look back at that and go, ooh. I did a 7-inch last year and that killed a couple of pieces. Now I'm sort of finalizing the stuff that's, I've got about an hour 15 that on a good night is an hour 15 and is 40 on a bad night. and is 10 on a really bad show. But that's been an interesting process, because even looking in that 2 year difference, because at that point with that cassette, I was like, all right, no, I don't do anything off of this anymore. And sort of like 2014 went a little crazy because I went into the comedy woods and was just like, I'm going like under the radar. I'm not trying to like book crazy things. I'm not trying to do prestigious stuff. I just need to learn how to like break through to the next level of jokes and get better and get more comfortable and get more natural. Because, like, I was at a point where I could get laughs, but it wasn't, I think even, like, just for myself, just didn't quite feel, I was unsatisfied with the quality. But, like, I felt like I could do better and sort of, like, fall back on it and go, like, well, even this stuff works. Like, I'll just refine it. Like, it's the punk rock mindset I can't shake. It's always, like, don't be precious, don't, like, be, like, nah, I mean, I'm never gonna, it's like, fuck it, like, next project, next thing, mm-hmm. and it was kind of probably the most, I mean, at the time, a miserable experience putting what's gonna be this record together, just a lot of emotional breakdowns, a lot of falling apart. A lot of watching people be real tired of my bullshit, where I have these crippling lows and these debilitating highs, and then watching it all collapse in on each other. But it's gotten to a point now where I only think it's a bad idea every other day. but it's at the same time been sort of thing where I think you have to go through all of that, and you have to just slowly figure out, not only, I think step one is figuring out like what is funny, like, and then what do you think is funny, but then also figuring out like what's funny about you, and like how do you get on stage and be funny without being needy, without needing to go to the audience like, come on guys, like if you're not laughing, I'm dying. Like, I have a cancer that's only cured by you guys laughing all the time. I used to walk off stage upset, and my girlfriend used to give me shit for it. I'm like, they didn't laugh. She's like, there wasn't a joke at that point. I'm like, yeah, they weren't laughing the entire time. She's like, that's a real, have you ever listened to it? Nope, that doesn't happen. Why do you think that would be a thing you could do? That thing that doesn't exist. And so I was like, fair point. Like, there was a while where the game was how long, like, where I was doing shows at open mics, and even on some shows and stuff, like where it was, I would set a new challenge where it wasn't like, you need to go on and just have a real nice set. Now, I'd be much further along, I imagine, in comedy if I was just like, I'm just going to be a real polished package and then be presentable with a showcase thing. But, like, I can't creatively, I find that unsatisfying, because I don't like artists that are like, well, here's my well-polished thing. Like, I love bands and filmmakers and artists who are rough around the edges, and you're sort of seeing the process, and you're seeing where like an artist is at that point in their career, you know, and how that's reflected in the art they're making. I love super prolific people. Like, that's why I've started trying to just keep putting stuff out, you know, and that I've recorded 3 pieces worth of stuff in that amount of time, because I'm just like, fuck it, Guided by Voices have 40 albums.
Sometimes you need that process, though, to realize that you just have to keep churning stuff out. I think it might have been at South by Southwest this year when Mark DuPlass.
Oh yeah,
said, he's another one of my hero guys. Every single weekend, and it kind of clicked with me. Like, why are we not filming every weekend? Like, instead of, you know, taking all this time to try to just put together the masterpiece.
And I am a guy who is very much a precious. Like I gotta actually, the second video that's that me and that, when I tried to do like the little collective thing before that ended up becoming this channel, was a piece called Spooky Talk. And I'm still really proud of what we came up with, but like, I don't know if you guys have this, because you're both creative guys, where like the idea sits for too long in your mind that it's become an angelic thing that no reality version is ever going to actually do. So when you make a perfectly cromulent final product, you're just like, well, I mean, it's not this abstract idea of what I built up in my mind, because like, I came up with that idea, and then it was probably 2 or 3 months before I pulled the trigger to do it. Mm. So by the time it came out, the exact thing I pitched is what is there. Like, because it's a parody of, I don't know, the real deep cut horror thing. Have you guys familiar with the Who's There video contest?
No.
I've been too afraid to enter it. I think I'm going to try next year, because it's too late for this year. But it's a video contest B&H Photo and some other people do, where it's a 3-minute horror short. And you just try to do what you can. They have different categories, and they're phenomenal. If you go to the Who's There channel,
is that
on YouTube,
the one that has the like little, the ladies like turning the light on
that's,
and off?
That's what our thing's a parody of.
That one's fucking terrible.
That's called Lights Out. It's made by a Swedish filmmaker, and it's the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
If you've not seen it, it's phenomenal. Amazing use of tension. Like,
I'll show it to you before you go to sleep tonight.
Okay.
It's real upsetting. I had trouble when we were making this, because I had to keep rewatching it to try to get stuff, and I'm so afraid of it that I would just be like, oh, great, now I'm scared. Awesome. You think that it's going to stop freaking out, and it doesn't. Like, so that was, I was like, oh, well, this is a bad plan on so many levels. But, but the final product we came up with was that, but that the monster talks. Because it's so much less scary if you hear someone talk, and she's bad at spooky talk. So it's like kind of a parody of someone who's bad at dirty talk. But so it's like, oh, are you tingling? Like, you tingling your jam jam?
Like,
I'm sorry, I'm not afraid now. This is weird. And so we ultimately shot it, and like, it's definitely pales in comparison to the thing we're parodying, but like, it's cute.
Yeah.
And there was definitely a point where my girlfriend and I had to accept that like, this is cute, but it is not a laugh riot. But nor did we write a laugh riot. We wrote a cute sketch, and then we shot a cute sketch. And when we ended up with a cute sketch, we're like, how did this happen?
Sometimes even with like the horror film that we just finished writing that we'll be filming next month, it's our first real attempt at horror. We just started becoming obsessed with it. And I had to keep scaling back and be like, wait, we can't put comedy in right here.
But I also feel like horror comedy is, like, difficult, but, like, yeah. I don't know, like...
We have some at the beginning.
Ultimately, what I want to do is find a way to do both, just because, yeah. like, I would say most of my favorite horror movies find a way to mix both, yeah. and not in, like, you know, a charming way, but in, like, where you're still... It's still emotionally impactful, even though, like... Because I feel like it's the fine line between Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland. Both are great yeah. movies. Mm-hmm. But, like, Zombieland is a fun comedy. And Shaun of the Dead is a hilarious movie. And then every time you watch it, you forget that there's a scene where they have to fucking shoot his mom in that
yeah.
head.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no, I forgot. I feel bad for the last half of this movie. Oh, it's a real romp until it's fucking not. And, like the Evil Dead, great example
yeah.
to me. Like, you know, Evil Dead is hilarious, but it's also fucking super fucked up.
Yeah. I have a hard time every time I see Bruce Campbell somewhere, like, taking him serious anymore because of that.
And so it's like, you know, so stuff like that. Peter Jackson's, you know, earlier, like, Dead Alive is a transcendently great movie. Like, yeah. but part of it is just, but it's also, like, disgusting.
No, it's, like, we've definitely found the balance. At least I feel like we found the balance of comedy in there, but it got to the point where it's just like, somebody's getting murdered right now, now time for a joke! And it's like,
yeah.
wait,
and that's not what you want. Yeah. I just feel like you gotta balance this. Like, yeah. I just feel like American Werewolf in London is the best example
that
of balancing horror and comedy.
Yeah.
Because, like, on the one hand, like, the horrific scenes, that like the guy getting chased through the subway, is paced so well and shot so well, but you also have, like, a zombie in a porno theater telling his friend he should kill himself, and, like, that's such a great thing.
Yeah. So the other one, I just barely, I actually have one more day of filming on. I've been doing sound on the director that put this together. None of us even know what the complete story is. He's kept it very under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And he's shot very out of sequence, so we're not completely sure. But the way that the comedy is of it is it takes place inside a 1950s TV show,
okay.
but with a modern day serial killer.
Okay.
And so far, I mean, everything that we've done, it's like, this is fucking awesome. And, like, I mean, the opening sequence is hilarious from what he's shown us already cut together. But I still have no idea what the entire thing is going to be. But I think he's meshed it very nicely so far.
Here's another weird thing I struggle with. It's funny, like, I seek out probably, like, the gnarliest shit.
Yeah.
Like, I've been having a love affair. I just discovered Last Podcast on the Left. I don't know if you guys know this. It's a true crime show. It's three comics out of New York who do it. And it's fucking grisly. And it's like, but, and
it's called On the Left?
Last Podcast on the Left.
Last Podcast.
And then like I just saw Green Inferno, and like my joke is like, I loved it. I'm not recommending it. People go see it, but I loved it. But it's funny because like, I'll go to start writing, and like I think I am that perfect age and perfect subsection of culture that the like ghosts of Columbine really follow, because like I was obsessed with horror movies and fat and weird at the worst time in America yeah. to be fat and weird and into horror movies, and so I've always had like especially with like. Violence in my own writing because of all that stuff, and it became such a, there was that couple years where it's just like, hey, like, you know, keep it all under your hat, bro, because everyone's looking at you and they will take you to jail. And like it's over a decade later, almost a decade and a half later, and I'm still convinced that if I write that someone has a bad day in a movie, like I'm gonna go to jail. So it's actually been a real exercise for me, like with horror, like with like starting with that step with the horror comedies, like I'm trying to get more and more into what I actually want to do, but my brain has almost been my worst enemy in all of it, because I literally still have that thought process that as I write, and his head comes off, and then like the police are just going to put their hand on my shoulder and go, sorry, we've been following you all along. It's time to go. And I'm like, no!
I've always been worried if I was to lose my stand-up notebook that would happen.
See, it's weird. I've said written some of the most fucked up things in stand-up, never has bothered me once. I've tried real weird like concepts, and like I've written real like racy stuff in a notebook. Haven't blinked an eye. It's literally just the idea of writing a story or a screenplay, because that's all I did at 12, and then was told like that's no longer an option. That it's taken a decade and a half to start undoing the damage.
So now with The Talking Dead, So how did that kind of come about with being able to write on that? I mean, that's
I don't write for the show.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, I'm just the PA for the show.
How did that part come about? Because I mean, that's just amazing.
It literally just came about the same time as the podcast stuff. Like Chris was like, "Hey, also they said I could have a PA on The Walking Dead. You want a job?" And I was like, "Me need money so bad." Like, to give you a good sense of how broke I was, when I went in for my first day of Talking Dead, I had paid for gas in change. And had enough gas to get there, and then was hoping I had enough change in my car to get home.
I have been there.
So it was I'm killing it now, but I definitely look back, and that was probably one of the like the lowest times. Was just like, and yet at the same time still being like, all right, like because I was working that would have been just at the end of that. So it was just me budgeting out. How long can I make this little bit of money I'd had last?
Yeah.
You know, but still trying to do stand-up and do other stuff. And, like, I still, you know, had a handful of things that would just cover enough. So it's like, well, I can hit that open mic because it's free and there's free parking, you know. And so I can make, if I can make it there by this time, I can do that and then limp the car home. Like, so it's been, yeah.
And when you finally started getting paid to do it, I mean, was it weird for you to finally be like...
For which thing?
I mean, as you kind of started with Nerdist and Talking Dead, where it's kind of that, like, all right, this is what I wanted to be doing, to finally start getting paid. Was it weird to be getting paid at that point?
No, because, like, honestly, it's still... I gotta choose my words carefully. It's still not what I want to do. Like, at the end of the day... It's still a job. It's arguably one of the cooler jobs.
But you still want to keep like, growing.
But it's still not stand up, and it's not making movies or like writing stuff. And so it's, you know, it's a sweet series of gigs, but it's not. So it's never like occurred to me like, oh, I made it now. Like that's definitely never occurred because it's you know, for me, like I've been such a like. Kind of fiercely independently minded person that like it'll feel like I've made it now when I've made it on my own terms, which I also accept. I don't know if it'll ever actually happen, but like for me it'll be more when I can like actually like sustain myself on stuff I'm actually like producing for myself more than, and like, you know, I just like everybody else, you know, am full of terror and self-doubt all the time, so it's taken a while to sort of like take positive steps towards trying to get that stuff.
Yeah, which, I mean, working for somebody like Chris Hardwick, I think if you did say, yep, this is it, I'm good, Chris would probably be like, what's wrong? Like, no, keep going.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so it's an interesting world, because I'm sort of, like, at it, but, like, at the same time, like, I am not Matt Meyer, I am not Jonah Ray, like, I am still just the guy, you know, cleaning up after.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a sweet, sweet job, but it's definitely still, you know, a job, and I mean, some of it's that I just don't know that I ever feel fully, like, comfortable anywhere. So there's definitely, like, an element of that.
With working with, you know, everybody there, what do you feel like is the biggest thing that you've kind of grown from them? Because, I mean, seeing even, like, when Nerdist started, mm-hmm. I mean, Matt was working at the Apple store. And yeah. I mean, they were still trying to even make ends meet. And now, I mean, they've grown on, gone on to have some, you know, great success. What's the biggest thing you've kind of taken from that as you continue to build your career?
That's a good question. I feel like all my answers will be real weird stuff. I feel like I've seen a lot of how the sausage is made in the industry, which has been an interesting thing, with like seeing how television is made and how projects are done and that kind of thing. So that's been an interesting learning experience, both about like what to do and what not to do. And so that's been an interesting thing.
I think even being part of, you know, such a prestigious podcast that has the guests that it has, I mean, even being able to kind of pull from that.
This would be the other thing that I would say that like, if I'm being totally honest, is like, an utter lack of celebrity worship is probably the thing that I've developed. Because on the flip side, for as many cool people as you meet, you definitely meet people when you're the help.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're not looked at as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the less cool part of the game is the parts where I'm like, oh, I'm being dehumanized by a millionaire.
You're living another period.
And so there's definitely that side too. And that's when I say, like, learning what I would and wouldn't do. It's then when you meet people who treat people like people, you're just like, oh, you're like a
yeah.
You have not been seduced by evil. Like, you did not get it. You know, and this is true, not just Nerdist, but like working at the theater and working around a lot of stuff, is that definitely seeing that difference between a person who got into this stuff because they love working on stuff and people who work on stuff because they really want to be like wealthy and shitty to people. You know, and but that's true of everything in life. And I think that's, you know, whether you work in an office or whether you work at a store or whether you work anywhere, like, just seeing that different types of humanity and like the different mindsets people carry to stuff. And I think just in this industry and having the fortuitous chance to be sort of like, isn't there like a book or a something where it's like a mouse or a cricket or something who's around for all the like famous moments in history? I always feel like that's my job, is that I'm not like, oh, like look at me and my peers changing the world. It's more like, oh, I'm the fucking kid who held the kite. Like, and so what up, Caitlin? This is Caitlin Durante. She's one of the co-producers on the open mic.
Yeah, you're fine.
I'm being podcasted. Is it four? I love that we're both just cripplingly early for this. but yeah, so I feel like I've always been sort of more of a just guy mopping up, you know, during the Battle of Gettysburg or something like that. Wasn't involved, not important at all, but was nearby and has, like, recollections of it. Not the most interesting point of view, but a point of view.
Somewhere in one of those memorials, there's just a little asterisk at the bottom. Kyle Clark was also here.
Yeah, no, it's not even that. Not even that. That doesn't come up. It's more just like, hey, so you were around as well? Like, my joke is always that, like, you know, 10 years from now, people are like, oh, so you were around for all that. Was that crazy? And I'm like, it totally was. And that was the end of the conversation.
It's like that newer Weird Al song is a lame claim to fame.
Yes.
Yeah, you were in the bathroom stall next to it while it all happened.
Yeah.
Which we were joking as we were coming down here, because we were listening to that album and being in Utah. That's everybody's lame claim to fame is, well, I once knew somebody who knew somebody else that talked to this person once.
See, I think it's interesting that, like, that stuff is the kind of stuff that just no longer... I'm just like, hey, but you've had a life and you grew up, and like, I don't care that like your cousin learns a lot. It's like, tell me about you as a person.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's definitely a thing culturally that I find, like, and again, I don't think that like being a part of like the industry at this point has affected that as much as like just going back to like punk rock and all that other stuff was just is going like, no, but you're a person, like, you're inherently interesting, like, that person, just because like they are on Code Black does not make them more interesting than you. Like, your mom died of cancer when you were 16, and then you had to, like, you know, do something really interesting that makes you just like, that's why I like stand-up so much, is like, it's not a person standing around going like, look guys, let me tell you some crazy stories of some people I know that some people stand up and that's fine, but like, for me, like, the most interesting thing about stand up is that you are watching people share who they are and stuff about them, because we're all inherently interesting, and some people are just really good at making that apparent. And I feel like that's so much of stand up is just going like, oh, that person's interesting and they're articulate, so that we'll pay them to tell us why they're interesting. You know, and so I think that on the comedy side of things is what I like probably most about comedy, is just I'm interested in people and people's experiences and people's emotions, because like, for me, I grew up just feeling like I'm 6'6", I'm goofy looking, like, I stick out in any situation I'm in, like, I'm loud, and not just in a, like, fun way, but just in a that's who I am, and so just don't ever feel like I fit in a place, and I like hearing other people share feelings, both of alienation or of everyday stuff, or whatever, just because, like, I feel like the beauty of comedy is that you're closing the gaps that the world creates in us to keep us separate and away from each other, and you know, so that we can be taken advantage of. And I think that, like, it's cool to see everybody reconnect and remember that we're all people and we're all, you know, not that different, and that that sort of humanizes people. And I think that's the best thing comedy can do, is humanize and connect people.
Yeah, it's almost, the thing I've always taken away from it is it's almost like a group therapy session where everybody kind of has that, they're going through a lot of the same similar shit. And I mean, even the self-deprecation of, you know, oh, am I feeling inadequate? Did my dad tell me I sucked today? Yep, he did. Oh, he told him he sucked too.
Yeah.
And it's nice to kind of feel that camaraderie of what everybody's
think,
going
what
through.
What I think good comedy transcends complaints into unity.
Yeah. Yeah, being able to take it where it's not just a whiny bit, even to making it this is the comedy of it.
And that's sort of why I sort of have fallen into the comedy that I do, is that it's built less around complaints and more about excitement, or like defending, I feel like, more so than attacking. Like, you know, like I have a bit on my record about where I become almost evangelical in my defense of Taco Bell. Like, and it's dumb and it's supposed to be silly, but the point of it is that it's sort of saying, like, here's another perspective on something. Like, you can write something off for your perspective of it, but here is another way you can think of something. And from this point of view, it has all these other attributes that you would never think to apply to this silly thing.
Yeah, that's, I absolutely love looking at it from that perspective, especially when it is something that's observational, of being able to make it your own and not the same thing.
Yeah, and that comes out of, like, my love of, like, things like Black Flag, or like Minor Threat and Fugazi, you know, or in that sort of same sort of like element of things where it's just going like here's how we're alienated. Then you sort of hear that, you hear your first Clash song, you're like, I feel that way too, this is crazy. Are you allowed to feel this way? Like, can we just do this? You know, I think it's why, like, you know, like, again, why you just see, just, you know, punk rock shows, just people losing their minds, because they're like going like, oh my god, like, we are all gonna be okay, and every waking moment of my life up until we were hanging out right now, that was really dicey on the table. But for like an hour, we're going to be fine, and then I'm going to be energized and know that this might happen again, and that's going to keep me going a little longer.
So I appreciate you taking the time today. I know your schedule is just absolutely slammed. I know you guys have got to get ready to get set up for open mic tonight.
Are you sticking around for it, or are you heading out?
So I'm planning to stick around.
Okay,
so
cool.
But yeah, it's always good to come to a show here. I look forward to it every time we're in town. I have to make sure that somewhere on the schedule we're doing something at Meltdown.
Oh, right.
It's almost become like I mean, for you, it's really like a second home. But
I literally slept in every chair in the room.
it's more of like, this is part of the destination. Anytime we're down here, I don't give a shit where we're staying, there's going to be a night at Meltdown.
Nice. Well, very cool. Well, I'm glad we could get this all set up and do this. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, not a problem at all. And where can everybody find you on social media?
So I'm at Kyle Clark is Rad on the Twitter and the Instagram. So you can follow my terrible social media practices there, but there's some fun stuff. And then the This Is Rad podcast is on Stitcher and iTunes. I'm incredibly proud of it. It's probably one of the things I put together that best reflects, like, sort of my philosophies on stuff. I do it with Matthew Burnside, who also works here and used to be on the Indoor Kids, and he's a good kid. And then my girlfriend Natalie Hazen produces that, and she's also on it, and we have people come on and talk about something that they don't ever get to talk about that they're super into, because it's amazing how much you get to know a person when it's not like, oh, what do you do for work, but it's more like, what's the thing that fucking gets you super excited when no one's paying attention? Like, and it's been, there's so many different kind of cool elements to that, and it's sort of trying to bring a single positive thing to the internet, which loves telling people why things are bad, and we tell people why things are rad. So there's that This Is Rad video. We've got 3 videos up there right now. It's brand new. Again, crazy proud of it. New stuff in the pipeline. We've got all sorts of, some of the weirdest stuff I've ever shot. I think our sketch for October should be up in about a week, and it's insane. It's, it may or may not involve a fruit dancing to a famous horror movie theme song for a minute and a half. So those probably would be the things I plug most. And then I have an album on that's distributed through did it independently, and then periodically people have helped me distribute it. It's originally released on its own, but then literally figuratively when I did sold out of my original ones, did the re-release of it along with Burger Records, and it's available on Estoy Merchandise, which is the guy who sells all my merch, estoymerchandise.com, and it's an album called Pizza Night, and it's a cassette tape, but it also comes with a digital download. If you are a person who digs stand-up and you want to hear what a work-in-progress stand-up sounds like, doing jokes, like, I'm crazy proud of it. I produced the entire thing myself with my brother helping to run for tech for it. I'm also, if you ever listen to it and have questions on how to make your own comedy record, shoot me messages on Twitter, because I love, we got to make comedy specials seem less important, guys. So everybody make an album. It costs literally nothing. But I'm really proud of that. And then December 4th at Meltdown Comics, I'm doing an evening with Kyle Clark, and I'm recording it for my second album, which is going to be called I'm a Person. And it's going to be my first hour-long record. And I'm in fishing around for some things for how it's going to be released. It should be out probably by the end of 2016.
Awesome. That's exciting. And even one to plug for you, too. Is the Nerdist stand-up cluster that you were
on. Oh, thank you. Yes.
Your set on that was excellent.
Thank you very much. That was a real surreal experience doing that, because I remember listening to the first one and hearing Jonah and all those fellas doing that and going, like, that's really neat. And then doing one, I'm like, this is fucked up.
But no, your set on that was
It's really fun to listen to, because it's fun to hear something where I'm the least famous person on there.
So I like that Chris made a point of saying, you know, I cut myself out as much as possible. And then you just kind of get him there and there.
That is not wrong, because that show was 2.5 hours long when we did it.
So well, thank you again.
To a svelte 90. Yeah. Do the math, boys and girls. Do the math.
That is an hour.
Lizard people.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, thank you again so much, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome.